Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. And with me today is Dr. Mike Shepherd, the vice president of the aerospace and defense segment at 3D Systems. Dr. Shepherd, I'm excited to talk with you today. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alyssa.
So on today's episode, we are talking about additive manufacturing and the design lifecycle of 3D printed turbo machinery components. So can you just start by providing a background of additive manufacturing as a fabrication technique in the turbo machinery industry?
Thanks, Alyssa. So I think the adoption of additive manufacturing has really been growing in the turbo machinery industry. And I'd say that's true in a couple different ways. So not just the new build environment, right, where you're getting new construction of new designs, but it's also really important for the refit and aftermarket environment, you know, spare parts and things like that. There's a lot of different reasons, right? You do get design flexibility more than traditional methods. Now, it's not going to replace things like CNC, but it's going to really powerfully complement them. You do get very complicated geometries, which are possible now. And it's easy to incorporate extra complexity like cooling channels and for fluid flow and things like that. So you can also utilize it to combine a bunch of parts into one, which is super advantageous. We've seen examples of people, they were able to go from, 200 components, sometimes into one. And you can also iterate very quickly. So these are types of advantages that designers really love. On the back end, right, in the aftermarket, spare parts, things like that, it can really potentially cut down on your lead time. I think a lot of the people who are listening to the podcast have probably had that experience where, you're waiting a year for a part sometimes, right? So with the additive manufacturing technologies that we have now, you can sometimes get that core metal part in a few days. So that kind of design flexibility and really tightening up your supply chain really means that people are driven to pick up the additive manufacturing technologies.
Okay, so this is kind of a broad question, but what role does data play in additive manufacturing?
Well, that's a great question. So it's a little esoteric, but anytime you have components that you're counting on them to work either for safety or economic reasons, right? They've got to run to produce, to produce oil or whatever. You are really compelled to make sure that the component is going to work properly. And so you care about all the normal things to make sure a component can handle the stresses and strains, right? So you're going to need tensile data, potentially crack growth data. Sometimes you want high cycle fatigue data, compression data, shear, bearing, all kinds of different testing that you might need to have in order to make sure that your manufacturing processes are going to give you a good, reliable component. And this has been true historically, right? But these are additional tools in the toolkit, right? And you need to make sure that they're going to perform properly as well. Characteristics that I think are really important, things like corrosion properties and fluid compatibility and stuff like that. So a lot of times you'll make sure you got a good stress strain curve, but you forget about, corrosion or, whether the seal can take that downhole environment. So it's also good to pay attention to anything that's going to impact the performance and reliability of the component.
Okay. And as we, kind of talked about, there are different types of additive manufacturing with different names and stuff. So can you kind of break those out and then talk a bit about the advantages and the drawbacks?
Sure. So with respect to the different naming, so I'm just going to kind of work through laser powder bed fusion, or you'll sometimes see it called LPBF. LPBF is kind of the generic name for the technology. So you're laying down a layer of powder, and then you use a laser or lasers to weld that together into dense metal. And you build a component up one layer at a time, right? So it gives you tremendous flexibility. But, a lot of times you'll hear different trade names for laser powder bed fusion. So there are a number out there. So ours, we call it direct metal printing, or DMP. Sometimes there isn't a lot of differentiation implied With the different terms, but sometimes there is. So the devil can be in the details. So for instance, with our DMP process, the direct metal printing, we do that in a very low oxygen environment. So less than 5 parts per million of oxygen. And so since these are just very fancy welding processes, you can imagine that that low oxygen environment might be really important. So I guess you have to do your homework a little bit about the specifics of the term and what company they apply to, and if they're part of a bigger, family of processes like LPBF. Now, with respect to the advantages and the disadvantages, we do a couple different things that are really important for turbo machinery. Maybe three big buckets. So the first thing that we do, or we do the laser powder bed fusion. That gives you the complexity, right? The cooling passages, the rapid design iteration, and we also do some polymer methods to do investment casting patterns. So if you need to do something that's really large, or if you really have a good relationship with your foundry, very confident in your foundry, then those additive assisted investment casting patterns are really a great approach. Both of those two things allow you to really unitize, which is to turn a bunch of components into one. So you can really tighten up your supply chain. You don't usually care about dropping weight, right? For terrestrial applications, if it flies, you need to drop weight. Both of those are good for that. And then there's kind of a third category of things, right? So maybe not the big bones. So like seals and gaskets, and jigs, tools, and fixtures. There's a lot that you can do with some of the polymer technologies that can really help a factory or shop run smoothly, or get those kind of secondary or tertiary seals and gaskets and stuff, help to get those very quickly. I think it's probably worth commenting on like dimensional tolerances and things like that. So the dimensional tolerances of most of the additive manufacturing techniques, you can get them within maybe 10 mils, right? So 250 microns, or whether you prefer English or metric units. You can dial them in even tighter than that often, but you may need to count on doing some finish machining, things like that, in order to get that last thousandth of an inch, in terms of tolerances and things like that.
So my next question had dimension tolerances in it. It's basically about the limitations of the machines themselves with regards to, maybe gas turbines or compressors, but in terms of size limitations, tolerances, metals. So maybe if you can build on that at all.
Sure. So I think so the tolerancing is important, right? I think you can't count on making exactly the right component, and having it pop right out of an additive manufacturing machine and pop right into a gas turbine engine. If you want that last thousandth of an inch, you're probably going to need to do a little bit of cleanup machining. Your mileage may vary, right? You can really dial these processes in a very impressive way if you get the chance to iterate just a little bit. Or we have computational tools that are built into our software that'll help you get really close. With respect to size limitations, there's kind of two buckets for this conversation. So if you're really looking for the very, very complicated components that you can make with laser powder bed fusion, with the complicated cooling passages and things like that, the mid-frame machines, they run in the 200 to 300 millimeter kind of category. Those are relatively affordable. If you're thinking in terms of CNC type equipment, those are, the low hundreds of thousands to mid hundreds of thousands typically. So that gets you into, I'd say, the smaller components. When you start to get into the smaller of the large components, you're at the 400, 500 millimeter range. That's about the practical limit of the machines that are out there and readily affordable. You can go larger than that, 600, 800 millimeters in diameter, but the machines start to be multiple millions of dollars. So it's pretty high rent in that part of town. And the parts that come off of those are going to be pretty expensive. And we see those utilized mostly by, national security type customers, or space companies, right? Who can really afford a very large and expensive part like that. Now, if you're talking about additively manufactured investment casting patterns, right, where the final metal component's going to come from a foundry, now there, honestly, there's tremendous opportunity to make very, very large components. So you can make the investment casting patterns by cobbling up the pattern out of multiple smaller segments. So I think the largest thing that I've seen was actually a 3 meter diameter stator. Something that's 3 meters in diameter, right? You have a your foundry issues are probably more important than the limitations you might see on the additive manufacturing side.
So what does the design life cycle of an additively manufactured turbo machinery component, what does it kind of look like? And then what are the advantages of these components? I mean, again, there might be some crossover from some of the other answers.
Sure. Yeah, so at the beginning, you start at conception, right? So you're beginning your design process, and with additive manufacturing, you can deal with you can the whole digital design space is much more sophisticated than it used to be. So we have lots of numerical methods. We have finite element methods that allow us to compute the stresses and strains and temperatures and things like that. We have computational fluid dynamics tools, CFD, which allow you to understand the flows inside this turbo machinery a lot better. And you can iterate those tools in order to get a very efficient gas turbine engine component. So now we are less limited by the manufacturing side of things, right? So conventional casting approaches, conventional CNC machining approaches. So now we're less limited by that on the design side. So you can get the real component in metal. You can be much closer to your design concept. Often, there were dimensions or ranges of geometries that you couldn't deal with conventional manufacturing processes, and things like the cooling channels, I think I mentioned previously, those could come at considerable cost, or those could be in fact impossible to make. So now, up front on the design, you can get something, you can get real metal that's much closer to your conceptual design in terms of its efficiency and complexity. As you go through on the tail end, right, as things start going through their life cycle out in the field, eventually you're going to need replacement parts, or you may need to retrofit something that had, some unhelpful vibratory modes or things like that. So the additive manufacturing allows you to iterate very quickly. So you can change a design up very quickly and make sure it's compatible with all of the stuff around them in the turbine engine component. And you can really tighten up that supply chain. So instead of waiting a long time for a very long lead time billet, and then you CNC that into your final component, there's the possibility that you can use, for instance, laser powder bed fusion. From the moment you hit go, you're going to get the core of that metal part. You're going to get that in 2, 3, 10 days, right, for a larger component. So you're going to get that very quickly, and then it's going to be ready for any subsequent machining that you may need to do, or heat treatment, things like that. But that can that upfront time waiting for the billet and the machining and so forth on the front end, that can be we see very commonly it can be months and months, or sometimes over a year. So different places in the design cycle, you can get different advantages from additive manufacturing.
Okay, and then kind of looking forward, over the next decade, what advancements do you see taking place for this type of technology?
Yeah, I'm really excited, Alyssa, about what's coming. So I think the sky's the limit, honestly. I think we're going to see a lot of improvements in terms of the throughput of the processes and the economy of the processes, and that's going to allow a lot more people to use them a lot more aggressively and a lot more effectively. I'm a dirty-handed metallurgist by trade, right? So I'm really excited about the work that people are doing in metallurgy. There are these new computational methods that you can use to discover new alloys, and you see this more and more. And so they're going to be these materials are going to be compatible with laser powder bed fusion, and they're going to allow us to use materials at higher stresses and strains and temperatures than we have been able to in the past. One that we're really excited about right now, it's a new NASA alloy, GRX 810. We've started printing that recently, and it could be pretty great for high-end turbo machinery components ultimately. So tremendous innovation is coming, and it's going to go right into additive manufacturing.
Okay, this was awesome, Dr. Shepard. Thank you. I feel like I could ask you a million more questions. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you for your time, Alyssa. Glad to be here.
And thank you to our audience for tuning in. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, and we will see you next time.